to die ashore. As I kick at the clouds at my hanging, as I swing out over the crowd, I will search every face for Lucinda's, and she'll go off with me down the hill. I thought I broke loose of Lucinda, the rain returned and so did the wind. I cast this burden on the God that's within me. She didn't want money or pearls, but that wasn't enough for Lucinda. She wasn't that kind of girl. Now I've fallen from grace for Lucinda. Who ever thought that hell'd be so cold? I did well for an old tin can sailor. She wanted a bell in my soul. I've spoken to God on the mountain, and I swam in the Irish Sea. I ate fire and drank from the Ganges, and I begged hell for mercy for me.
This is Ink Studs, CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Ink Studs, the radio show where we talk about comics, for lack of a better term. My guest today is Chris Wright, whose odd little book, Inkweed, is out from Sparkplug Books. I picked up a copy quite a while ago, and then Dylan, the publisher of Sparkplug, sent me another copy in the mail, so I went over to my co-host, who I haven't been able to arrange to meet up with us to talk about this. So it's just me and you today, Chris.
Oh, that's very fine.
That's fine. Tell me about Inkweed. Is ink a drug for you? Do you like? Does it take you to another place?
There is something. I find. I think maybe a lot of cartoonists are like this, or maybe it's a certain breed of cartoonist who find penciling kind of excruciating, but there's something about inking that releases some kind of something in your brain, some kind of I don't know enough about the brain to even
some endorphins.
Endorphins, yeah. So, I mean, to some degree, it's sort of what I do to stay alive or to continue to exist in the world, which is kind of heavy right off the bat, maybe. But
that's fine. We can go there.
It's yeah. So I mean, the answer is yes in a way. It's a kind of drug. It's for the actual origins of the book, everything in it, it's sort of I met Dylan, I think 2003 at SPX, and through David Youngblood, who is a guy who put out my first mini comic and now has a gallery in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I always confuse Seattle and Portland, called Pony Club. And he introduced me to Dylan and Ben Catmull and all these other really cool cartoonists from that area. And he had been a student at SCAD in Savannah. That's how we met. And Dylan had just sort of gotten in touch with me through the years. Now and then he'd send me an email saying, let's do something. And eventually it got to a point where I was like, I probably actually should do something. I should put some kind of book out there, because I was working on this other book for another publisher, and I wasn't sure how long that was going to take. And in the interim, I just wanted to get something out so the six or seven people who knew about me from the mini comic and like some of my anthology work wouldn't forget about me. And so I just sort of, in the end, scraped up. Or I went through my archives, rather, and just sort of looked at some of the more, the larger things that I had done.
Mm-hmm.
The Tapestry story had been in the ill-fated Blood Orange anthology from Fantagraphics, and the...
Fantagraphics' attempt of doing art comics.
Yeah. Yeah, I just held together. I wanted to get something out there, and I knew I had a feeling that with Dylan, since he wanted to do it and he was a friend of mine, that we'd be able to turn it around pretty fast. Like when I sent the stuff to him, he'd be able to send it to the printer and get it out in a couple weeks, and that's actually what ended up happening.
Really?
So Because I consider, well, maybe I should see if Bodega is interested, or Buenaventura, or whatever. And I felt like if I did that, it would take, you know, months and months and months just to hear back from them whether mm-hmm. they're even interested or not. And Dylan was putting out some really cool stuff in addition our friendship, and it was just sort of a no-brainer.
So you feel like a lot of the work that comes out from Sparkplug is kind of your contemporaries?
He sent me, I'd seen some of the stuff he'd done, and he sent me like this box of stuff that he'd done, I think, since, because I hadn't really hung out with him mm-hmm. for a couple of years. And you know, the John Hankowitz book Asiatic, I don't know how you even pronounce that, but
Asiatic,
yeah. And it just looked like he had really, you know, sort of nailed it on the production values with those books, and so I was pretty confident that it was going to turn out right. I don't know how much confidence he had in my ability to to pull it off, but I'm pretty pleased with the end result, mostly. But most of it is old work, you know, stuff I had around that, like I said, it had been published in other places or maybe not published, and I went through all the stuff I had and sort of pick things out that I could live with. You know, you have to. It comes to a point where you just have to deal. You know, it sort of goes without saying you're embarrassed by your old work, but you have to just get to a point. It's like, this is what I did. This represents me, whether I like it or not, and put it together.
Tell me about the world of Inkweed. It's like this odd, I want to say, kind of Victorian.
Yeah.
But also part of it's like turn of the century, like some kind of like Picasso-esque.
Yeah, it's sort of a. It's sort of this. And it doesn't just go for the stories in this book. I'm sort of still operating under that this aesthetic, I guess. It's basically, I'd say, sort of 1850 to 1920. Roughly, it's just instinctive. I guess when I was a student, I used to sort of justify it by saying I don't want my work to be contemporary. I want it to be for all time.
Yeah,
which is of course absurdly pompous. But
I'll be a forgotten master.
I am all things to all men. But, you know, and I think part of it may have actually also been informed by Ingmar Bergman's films, who's been a huge influence on me. Sort of was The Road to Damascus in some ways. Fanny Alexander sort of changed the way that I... All my friends who are listening to this are rolling their eyes because I just won't shut the fuck up about Fanny and Alexander. But
well, if it's important to you.
Yeah, you know, and he seemed to have a real affinity for the late 1900s. Probably because it's this weird mix of repression and flamboyance and that kind of thing. The three main stories in the book are particularly influenced by him, his chamber dramas. These things that sort of revolve around three or four characters and usually don't end well, which I guess goes back to Ibsen and whatever the playwrights of Denmark and Sweden and there's another guy, I'm forgetting his name, but anyway, and it also just has to do with certain aesthetic fetishes that I have. I just look at Victorian stuff and I think it's beautiful, and it seems to be kind of a thing with cartoonists, from Chris Ware and Klaus to Tony Millionaire. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a certain breed of cartoonist that seems to be obsessed with that general time period. You know, Seth,
yeah.
Maybe a little later with Seth, you know, the 20s and that kind of thing. But just when things generally seem to be more crafted, you know, well crafted, and there was even maybe some kind of dialogue between the viewer of an advertisement or of a sign and the sign itself, which maybe, you know, is sort of intrinsic to the way that people read comics and the dialogue between the image and the words and the reader.
There's something about it that strikes me as you kind of have a, and I don't know where I get it from, but I feel kind of a kinship with Jason in your work.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I love Jason's work. He maybe it's the existential dread. and he's sort of I was very influenced by Trondheim.
Yeah.
At a certain point, which was I feel like I'm doing better now, but it was a real struggle for me for a while to try to like dig out of that influence, because it was so on the face of it. Like, I had the cross-hatching thing, but the construction of the characters was so Trondheim. And then when I saw Jason, for some reason, when I first saw him, it also reminded me of Trondheim. So I may have kind of assimilated the two influences or something like that. I have to be honest, I think I've read about 3 or 4 Jason books. I haven't been very good about keeping up with his work.
There's lots to read.
Yeah. I think the last thing I read was that Martian piece, which is just incredibly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember what it was called.
No.
It's embarrassing.
That's okay. You know, I forget half the things I read. Maybe I read too much. Tell me about the creatures, the humanoid things, like,
right.
Their physical identities, is that kind of, does that represent their own internalisms, like how they are as characters of how they are presented, like to kind of their different, I guess,
right.
horrific looking physical identities?
Well, there are two answers to that, I guess. The one answer is yes, which I guess would come from, I'm like obsessed with German expressionism, you know, and the idea that the inner state of the subject is reflected in the painting, and in the representation of the subject. So yeah, on that level, and also surrealism and the idea of automatic drawing, like in a lot of these illustrations. I mean, obviously, I have the context of my style to put this in, but. When I sit down to do some random drawing, you know, like one of the incidental drawings in Inkweed, I sort of just let it go and just see where the shapes go and try to make a character out of it.
Is that kind of following the Mark Bell school of just drawing and see what happens?
Sure, yeah, to some degree, though I don't take it as far as Mark Bell, obviously. Not many people do, but,
No.
Yeah. So that kind of idea of just letting your subconscious move your hand or something like that sounds a little pretentious. But,
That's, the ink sets are all about pretentiousness.
Good. There's not enough pretentiousness in comics, I feel. There's too much, apology for aspiration.
There we go. Let's just, you know, we're hot shit. Deal with it.
Yeah, damn right. And then the more practical answer, I guess, is when I was, like a lot of young men interested in comics, I did the superhero thing for a while, and my bridge to the underground and to alternative comics is Von Bodine, who's not a cartoonist and I'm really all that interested in anymore, but I was obsessed with him for a while, and his character designs are so sort of
otherworldly.
You know, yeah, otherworldly, non-human. Though, looking at that stuff now, it seems like they're a lot more human than some of the stuff I've come up with. I don't know, but, because Bodhi was appealing to me, I guess, at the time, because there was still sort of that that fantasy element to it, but also there was something else going on. There was some kind of, obviously this was an extremely troubled man, you know, who was doing these comics to try to expel something, so I got caught up in that for a while, and I think it sort of just transformed into whatever else, whatever it is I do now, and then mix in Dr. Seuss with all that, who obviously is an influence from childhood. And, you know.
I didn't even think about that, but that makes
yeah
total sense.
Yeah, my favorite Dr. Seuss things were always, they were never the classics. They were always like the sweet book, and I mean that's a classic too, but not Cat in the Hat or The Grinch. It was like anything that had all those weird, crazy characters in it. You know, this that was the stuff I was into.
Sally was a 15-year-old girl from Nebraska. Gypsies were passing through her little town. They dropped something on the road. She picked it up. And cultural revolution right away began. Oh no! Cult revolution just began. Oh no! Cult revolution just began. That I was schizophrenic. They always were afraid, что я родину no продал. А по правде я был просто маленький медведик. Сел на велосипеде и все нахуй проебал. Revolution just began. Oh no! Cult revolution just began. Oh da! Da 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 da! Oh no! She wore out of all table of contents that mother has provides. I'd like to be a big fat fucking fly, the one that spins around your head all day and all night. The sound of it is just like a what? But by the accident of some kind of dispensation, I ended up being a walking unique nation. And I survived even fucking radiation. A big fat fucking what? And I would visit you alive.
You went to art school. Was it for working on comics, or were you kind of more interested in more fine art aesthetics?
Yeah, I actually did a stint at the Kubert School.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, right? And maybe the less said about that, the better. But and I don't mean that as a diss against... Well, maybe I do. It was a rough period of my life, because I was kind of a mess, and I didn't know what I really even wanted to do in comics, and I left after a year. And
it's kind of a factory school, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's sort of like, the best description I've heard of it is like boot camp for mainstream comics.
Yeah,
you know, and not that they don't. They when I was there, they did have some faculty actually that was pretty. There was this guy. Oh shit! I'm forgetting his last name. Alex something. he did stuff for the New York Times and the New Yorker and that kind of thing. And he was an interesting character because he was this born again Christian who used to do a lot of angel dust or something like that. And so it was like, man, what's going on with this guy? You know, but I don't know. I get like I said, I don't want to really diss the school, because there are people that get a lot out of it. It just was not the scene for me. Then I went to I took a year off, and then I went to SCAD after that.
SCAD is the
Savannah College of Art and Design.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Savannah, and I met that's actually where, although I actually didn't meet them until grad school, that's where I met Eleanor Davis and Drew Wang, who I'm incredibly pleased to be associated. For all the bad things I may or may not have to say about SCAD, it was all worth it to meet those people.
Oh, they're disgustingly talented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could talk about them for an hour.
We'll leave that for another day.
They're probably wincing right now if they're hearing this.
Hi, guys.
Anyway, and that was the exact right place for me at that particular time. Even though, like I said, it was completely flawed, but all institutions are completely flawed, so you just have to take what you can out of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are, it's a cliche, but you are responsible for your own education to some degree. What I take away from art school is mostly the social stuff and meeting a lot of great artists that I'll know for the rest of my life, and generally being exposed to things, not necessarily in a classroom. I did take this one class, this film history class, that just absolutely changed my life. Not because of what he showed in the class, just because it got me, you know, renting these Fellini movies and Truffaut movies and that kind of thing, and completely changed the way that I think about narrative and comics, indeed. And then I went back to grad school, and sort of the same thing, the same kind of experience.
Now, you live in the middle of nowhere, from what I understand. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call it in the middle of nowhere right now, exactly. I'm a fellow at CCS.
Oh, okay.
Right now, which is still pretty in the middle of nowhere, but there are towns around. It's not far from, Hanover, which hosts Dartmouth College. It's around civilization. I did live more so in the middle of nowhere, I'd say, a few months ago, I'm kind of used to it because I was born and raised in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Savannah is the biggest city I've ever lived in. It's not exactly a huge. I've been to New York. I know what a big city is. I should. That's what I'm trying
to. Yeehaw!
Yeah. Yeah.
What
buildings sure are big.
Where are all these people coming from?
Where are they going?
Why do they keep moving so quick? It's like they have somewhere they need to be right away. I didn't know you were doing the fellowship at the CCS. How is that working for you as far as your own cartooning, like being around all these other kids or around a bunch of kids?
Interesting, lately I've been pretty sealed up, actually, because I've been working on my book, and people haven't seen a lot of me. They probably think I'm dying. But it's interesting. The other fellow here right now is Alec Longstreth, who, it's kind of interesting because we just play off each other in the sense that he's sort of this incredibly energetic populist, and I'm like this withdrawn snob. but it's nice, the thing that even at SCAD, it's amazing to watch someone who a student, come in and you see his work or her work, and you think, man, this is like really weak. then somehow miraculously they get better, you know, over the course of a few months, and it just looks like a miracle. But, you know, I mean, that's what hard work that's what hard work does. And it's nice to see that kind of thing. And but mostly, you know, I've just spent most of the time, I've just been working a lot lately. Just working hard. I haven't even really been a part of the community so much lately. But I'll tell you, it's nice to be able to call Jason Lutz by his first name. And James, too, for that matter. He was a professor of mine at SCAD, but which may have contributed to the fact that he is letting me be here now, but not letting me, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And Steve Bissett, too. He's a big teacher around. You guys should... have you already interviewed Steve?
I have not yet. It's one of those I'm kind of putting off. You know, that would be very interesting. And
it'd probably be a very easy interview because he knows everything.
Well, I just had Jason Lutz on a couple weeks ago, and he was just like incredible. Just an hour and a half of just nonstop. And no, it's no. Beside, I'm pretty familiar with his work, and it's one I got to do one day when I can sit and put down the time into the proper research. And
yeah, I understand.
When I do those big interviews, there's a lot of work that goes into it.
Oh yeah, I hear you.
So, tell me about the book you're working on right now, or is this bad luck?
Yeah.
To talk?
It's about pirates, but it's sort of about, I'm just trying to think of an analogy, it's kind of about pirates the way that, I can't think of an analogy. It's like, it's not really, it's not a historical piece. I guess it exists sort of in the same world, this sort of, like, cross-dimensional world that a lot of the stories in Inkweed do.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this school teacher who ends up getting accidentally shanghaied onto a pirate ship, and about his relationship with the captain the character point sort of the captain as a character is that he's this guy who wants to do as much violence as he possibly can while he's alive so that he can meet his wife in hell. So it's an up piece.
I love it.
It's a feel-good thing. And it's sort of about, the book, in a way, is more about how that delusion falls away. I guess when you have that as an ideal in the first place, it's you're not starting from a very good place.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually gives that up, and it's a very nihilistic kind of book. Even though I don't really embrace nihilism as a philosophy, you just start these things and they go in a certain direction, and what are you going to do about it?
The story takes you where it takes you.
Yeah, which is I've never had that problem that some people have had, where the characters actually become like human beings in your own brain and run away with you, and you can't control what they're saying or thinking.
Yeah.
and all that. I haven't had that problem yet, but definitely with narrative, it's just kind of like, well, I find this kind of morally repugnant, but but it's the direction the story's going in, and so it's more of a story thing barreling down a hill.
It's taking you somewhere, and you just kind of hope you can keep up.
Yeah, hope you can keep up and actually contain it, make something out of it. I'm going to compare myself to Michelangelo right now. Not seriously. But you know, it's like you said, the form is already in the stone. You just have to chip away the pieces.
There we go.
It's, yeah.
Time to ride the ink to where it takes you.
Yeah, you know, and it doesn't take you to very pleasant places sometimes, but you just got to hold on.
But that's okay.
It's necessary.
Thank you for taking the time to chat with me today.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
And
I appreciate the opportunity.
Ink Studs are happy to have you on. Oh, I didn't like saying that. I sound like Cerebus or something. Ugh, I feel a little sick with myself. Thank you so much for joining me today, Chris.
Oh, thank you again. I appreciate the opportunity.
That was Chris Wright. His book is Inkweed from Sparkplug Books. And hopefully we'll be seeing some more good stuff by him. Check it out, folks.
Won't you lend your lungs to me? Mine are collapsing. Plant my feet and bitterly breathe up the time that's passing. Breath I'll take and breath I'll give. Pray the day's not poison. Stand among the ones that live in lonely indecision. Her fingers walk the darkness down. Mind is on the midnight. Gather up the gold you found, your foolish only moonlight. And if you try to take it home, your hands will turn to butter. You better leave this dream alone, try to find another. Salvation sat and crossed herself and called the devil partner. Wisdom burned upon a shelf, who killed the raging cancer. Seal the river at its mouth, take the water prisoner. I'll fill the sky with screams and cries, bathe in fiery answer. Jesus was an only son, and love his only concept. With strangers crying foreign tongues and dirty up the doorstep. And I for one and you for two ain't got the time for outside. But keep your injured looks to you, and we'll tell the world that we tried.